Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at efforts to improve women's reproductive health. But first, Tanzania's president has confirmed an outbreak of Marburg in the country. President Samia Suluhu Hassan made the statement on Monday in Dodoma, the capital, alongside World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. The WHO first reported a suspected Marburg outbreak on January 14th, which had claimed the lives of 8 people in Tanzania's Kagera region. Tanzanian health officials disputed the report hours later, saying tests on samples had returned negative results. President Hassan said Monday that further tests had confirmed a case of Marburg.
Laboratory tests conducted at Kabaile Mobile Laboratory in Kagera and later confirmed in Dar es Salaam identified one patient as being infected with the Marburg virus. Fortunately, the remaining suspected patients tested negative with other illnesses. This confirmed case of Marburg virus marks the second outbreak of Marburg virus disease in our country. As you may recall, the first outbreak occurred in March 2023 in the same Kagera region. As of today, January 20th, 2025, there have been 25 suspected cases of Marburg who have tested negative and close follow-up has been ongoing. The cause of earlier reported deaths in the community has not been confirmed, and the efforts are ongoing to ascertain the source of infection.
That was Tanzania's president, Samia Suluhu Hassan. Now, WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus reiterated the organization's commitment to Tanzania in addressing Marburg.
I'm releasing $3 million US from the WHO Contingency Fund for Emergencies, and this is in addition to the $50,000 that we contributed earlier to support the initial investigation. At this point, I would like to thank our partners, including the European Union, US government agencies, the United Kingdom, and numerous other national and international health partners for their strong collaboration to work to bring this current outbreak under control under the leadership of the government. Considering the low global risk and the strong capabilities of the Tanzanian government, WHO advises against restrictions on trade and travel to the country. And as Her Excellency said, Tanzania is open for business.
That's WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Cervical Cancer Awareness Month is observed every January to raise awareness about cervical cancer and how to prevent it. Cervical cancer develops in a woman's cervix. According to WHO, 99% of cervical cancer cases are linked to infection with the human papillomavirus, HPV, an extremely common virus transmitted through sexual contact. Medical experts say this can be prevented with the HPV vaccine. Through its HPV vaccine program, Gavi is enabling countries to have access to the vaccination. Joining us live from more insight is Emily Kobayashi, Gavi head of HPV vaccines program. Ms. Kobayashi, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
First and foremost, tell us about the HPV vaccine and why it's so critical for preventing cervical cancer.
Thank you. Every 2 minutes globally, a woman dies from cervical cancer. And these are deaths of women in the prime of their lives, their mothers, their caregivers, their leaders in their community. And these deaths are almost completely preventable with early vaccination against HPV for girls and screening for adult women. As you said in your introduction, the HPV vaccine prevents over 90% of these cervical cancer cases.
And what has been the overall impact of Gavi's HPV vaccine program? And first of all, explain to us what the program is.
Yes, we are working with national governments to introduce the HPV vaccine into the health system. And for countries that are already providing the HPV vaccine, we're supporting purchase of the vaccine. We're working with technical partners and CSOs to get the word out about the HPV vaccine and making sure that all girls 9 to 14 have access to the vaccine. So to date, we've supported 42 countries to introduce the HPV vaccine. And by the end of 2023, we had reached 27 million girls. We estimate that this averted over 600,000 future cervical cancer deaths.
Are the countries that Gavi support in this particular program, are there mostly in low and middle income regions, or is it global?
Yes, Gavi works with low and middle income countries to support their immunization systems. So of those 42 countries that I mentioned, 24 of those are in Africa, ranging from large countries like Nigeria and Ethiopia and smaller countries like Eswatini and Togo.
And speaking of Africa, what progress has Gavi made in increasing HPV vaccine coverage?
Well, I think the first thing to realize is that the burden of cervical cancer is particularly high in Africa. So of the top 20 countries for cervical cancer burden, 19 of them are in Africa. But fortunately, there has been strong commitment from advocates, cervical cancer survivors, communities, and government leaders across the continent who have raised awareness about this condition and pushed for access to the vaccine. So we've actually seen that 29 out of 47 countries in the WHO Afro region have introduced the vaccine, 24 of these with Gavi support. And the coverage and the access to the vaccine is increasing as a result. So in Africa, 40% of girls received one dose of the vaccine in 2023, which was a significant increase from 22. And I want to mention that it's actually the region that the WHO works with the second highest coverage of HPV vaccine in the world, second only to the Americas. So we're seeing the result of that strong commitment from advocates and leaders to ensuring girls have access to the vaccine.
In Africa, which countries have shown the most improvement? One or two countries, maybe if you can name a couple of countries.
Yes, many countries faced significant challenges in delivering the vaccine during COVID, when schools were closed, when the health systems were disrupted. And so we saw coverage go down in those years. But we've also seen countries in the years since making very concerted efforts to catch up girls who were missed. So I want to mention Lesotho. They ran a campaign in schools, communities, universities to improve their coverage. And this was actually championed by the Queen of Lesotho herself, who celebrated the results of that campaign. Another example is Malawi, where they deliberately focused their vaccination efforts on increasing access to the vaccine in every part of the country. And as a result, they raised their coverage from 13% in 2022 to 68% in 2023.
You mentioned some challenges such as the COVID-19 period that has impacted vaccine access and vaccine delivery for many countries on many fronts. So talk to us a little more about that, and how does Gavi address challenges specific to Africa, such as vaccine accessibility in rural areas?
Yeah, we work closely with governments first and foremost, but they have been able to bring together large segments of society to advocate for and push for the vaccine. So Nigeria is an example of a country that introduced the vaccine beginning in 2023, and they engaged a whole society push to get the word out. So they engaged the media so that they would have the correct facts about HPV. They worked with religious leaders from different states within Nigeria, traditional leaders. We had cancer advocates sharing their stories, talking about the losses that they had experienced as a result of cervical cancer. There were social media influencers, school leaders, parents, and even the girls themselves were engaged to get the word out about the vaccine. So with all those parts of society involved, they know the right way to deliver the messages, to deliver the right information, to support parents to make the right decision and the girls to get access to the vaccine.
And cultural barriers are very, are a reality in some settings, and you touch a little bit on it. Could you expand a little more about the strategy and lessons learned when deploying vaccines on the ground in rural areas where sometimes you have cultural barriers and also misinformation? What lessons have been learned over the years that is helping Gavi in its strategy?
Well, I think the important thing is to understand who are the trusted communicators in those communities. Is it a religious leader, a traditional leader? Is it a parent? And making sure that those people and those trusted voices have the right information and have the opportunity to ask their questions and understand what the vaccine is for, how safe is it, all the evidence that's behind the vaccine. And those are the people that are able to take those messages, translate them in their own language, but also for their own context, and explain why accepting the vaccine is the right decision for their community. So it's really about empowering those people with the correct information to get the word out.
Now, recently, Gavi, UEFA, and CAF, the Africa Confederation, Football Confederation, have hosted the Girls Integrated Football Tournament in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. And the event was a platform to drive HPV vaccination and cervical cancer prevention program. Talk to us about that and how this was really addressed in terms of the impact, the implementation on the ground, and why was it important to have such a collaboration with the other organizations?
Well, this was such an exciting engagement for us to have this opportunity with these young female athletes, with these HPV champions and footballers. So we were so pleased to be able to work with our partner, the non-governmental organization Girl Effect, to organize a workshop where those female players could come together and learn about this critical health issue. So they had a chance to engage with a panel of experts. And then they had a creative breakout session where the girls themselves were thinking about how could they share the information they've learned and become champions themselves. So we hope that for those girls that participated, that this would be a chance for them to learn about their own health and well-being, but also to be champions in their community. And we're really pleased to be part of this UEFA Together program because it really underscores our collective commitment to empowering these young women athletes.
And how do collaborations such as this one help in the long run in cervical cancer prevention?
Well, I think it's just an innovative and exciting way to get the word out about cervical cancer and make people aware that this is actually a cancer that can be prevented. That is such a special opportunity. And it's about vaccination for young girls well before they are exposed to HPV. And it's also about screening for older women. So taking these steps throughout your life can protect you from cervical cancer and protect your community as well. So we're just excited to get that information out there.
And finally, before we let you go, what is the message? What message does Gavi want to convey? For example, when there is an issue with regards to vaccine acceptance, because this is a reality we have seen over the years, even during the COVID-19 crisis, it was really amplified. So when it comes to vaccine hesitancy and vaccine mistrust, what is the message?
I think the message has three parts. First is that this vaccine can prevent over 90% of all cervical cancer cases and has already saved millions of lives in Africa and around the world. Second, HPV vaccines have gone through rigorous testing and monitoring to ensure that they are safe and effective, and they've been used in many places. And third, many parents have already made the decision for their children to take the vaccine, and you can do so with the full confidence that it's the right choice for your family and your daughter's health.
Fantastic. Emily Kobayashi, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was Emily Kobayashi, Gavi head of HPV vaccines program. We thank her for joining us, and we thank you for being with us today. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. When we return, we will look at endometriosis. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says endometriosis affects 190 million of reproductive age women worldwide, but in Africa, awareness remains low. A Nigerian nonprofit is leading a campaign to raise public vigilance and help women cope with this painful condition. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
20 years ago, Sharon Nkechiadu experienced her first menstrual cycle at the age of 15. And every month since then, when her periods come, the pain is so severe she has to be hospitalized.
My mom specifically, she didn't take it to be a serious thing. So I keep managing it down to my university. Emotionally, it's always something else, because sometimes you get to a point where you're like, why this?
The World Health Organization says the medical condition endometriosis affects 10% of reproductive age women and girls globally. It causes severe pain in the abdomen and pelvis and could elevate the risks of infertility by up to 50% in women. But despite the threat, a lack of accurate data on its prevalence in sub-Saharan Africa has led to underdiagnosis and low reporting compared to Europe and the United States.
We have about 30 to 40% of our patients are endometriotic. That's women who are in their reproductive age. And it's also believed that 11% of our pupils also have undiagnosed endometriosis. The stigma here is that it's very, very unreported because of lack of knowledge about the disease. That's number one. Because of lack of knowledge about specialist diagnosis of the disease. Because the disease is also, the investigative procedures to diagnose the disease is expensive and it's not mostly available in most regions of Nigeria.
Many here also don't view endometriosis as a significant problem. That's where Olivia Nwankudu and her nonprofit EndoSurvivors International Foundation come in. She launched in 2017, years after learning about her own condition, to raise public suspicion and increase diagnosis.
When a young girl walks into a doctor's office presenting with severe period cramps, endometriosis is not usually the first thing on their mind. So I just thought that other women should not suffer as much as what I suffered. And we also do some training for doctors, you know, for primary care doctors, so that they can increase the index of suspicion for endometriosis.
The foundation has helped more than 2,000 endometriosis patients access care and takes awareness to thousands of school girls. It also holds periodic support meetings to help women suffering emotionally.
When I joined and I met other women, that our stories are almost the same. It feels like we're living the same life. And I just felt relief, like, okay, I am not alone, I am not crazy, I am not overreacting.
It just gave me a sense of belonging, knowing that I am not alone in this journey. I have other people that have these similar experiences with me.
Nwankudu says without much government and private sector support, it will be difficult to spread awareness about endometriosis, and many more women could be worse off. Timfi Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
For more insight on endometriosis, I spoke with Dr. Augustine Kwabina Tawia, an obstetrician and gynecologist in Kumasi, Ghana.
Endometriosis is a condition that simply means the presence of endometrial tissue outside the endometrial cavity. Now, if you take the womb or the uterus of a woman, it has three layers. We have the outside layer, what you call perimetrium. We have the middle layer, which we call myometrium, and we have the inner layer, which we call endometrium. So endometrium is supposed to be inside the inner layer of the uterus. So once you have tissues of the endometrium outside the endometrial cavity, that's what results in endometriosis. So in simple terms, endometriosis is the presence of endometrial tissue outside the endometrial cavity.
What are the primary causes and risk factors for endometriosis, and how do genetic and perhaps environmental factors contribute to its development?
Endometriosis has been known for years. However, there's not a single cause of endometriosis, but certain factors have been associated with endometriosis that led to the development and the progression of the disease. Some of the factors include a genetic factor, meaning that it's known to run through families, a first degree relative, a mother, a daughter, and a sister is known to run through. And then environmental factors, it's known that air pollution, pollution of water, and it can also occur because of a complication from surgery. You may have a woman who undergone myomectomy for uterine fibroid, and the process, it can result from movement of endometrial tissue to other parts of the body. So these are some of the few conditions that can associate with endometriosis.
So when we talk about the tissue moving in other parts of the body, can it literally go anywhere, even the brain, the breast, or are there some targeted areas in the body that the tissue will move to?
It can be found in the pelvis. It can even be found on the skin. It can even be found in the lungs and also in the brain. So depending on many parts of the body where it is found, it can present to specific symptoms to the patient, and then when it's examined or interrogated, we can find signs of the condition.
How does it affect a woman's reproductive health, and what are its long-term implications for overall health?
Endometriosis is a condition that has a huge burden on the reproductive performance or health of women. Now, endometriosis essentially presents with heavy menstruation, it presents with pain, it can also present with infertility. So it's, in terms of reproductive health, it's a huge burden. Imagine a woman who comes to you every month presents with heavy menstruation, leading to her being anemic and at times being admitted to the hospital. This woman at times may also have chronic pelvic pain, low abdominal pain because of endometriosis. And then this woman over a period has been trying to conceive, but to no avail. So endometriosis has a huge burden on the reproductive health of women.
How much of a burden is it among African women?
Endometriosis is a condition that has been with us for many years. But as we know, once it involves reproductive health, many African women are conservative in discussing such conditions because they are shy to discuss menstrual issues, fertility issues, and then lower abdominal pelvic pain with colleagues or with relatives or come to the hospital. But with the advent or improvement in our health system, a lot of women are reporting to the hospital with conditions that are suggestive of endometriosis. And upon further evaluation, some are picked to have the condition.
How is it diagnosed? How do you know that a woman has endometriosis as opposed to any other condition in the reproductive area, especially given that it's so hard to detect?
Usually it's about history. The person presenting to the hospital or the healthcare institution complaining of, she'd be a woman of reproductive age, complaining of lower abdominal pain, heavy menses. Some may even present to you with inability to conceive over a year. So upon further evaluation, based on the history that this patient may present to us in the hospital, and based on our examination findings, and importantly, the diagnosis of endometriosis essentially done with diagnostic laparoscopy. And now diagnostic laparoscopy is becoming more and more common in many African health institutions, hospitals. So once women present with the history suggestive of endometriosis, they undergo diagnostic laparoscopy. And then those that are picked to have endometriosis are managed as such.
So why would you say that endometriosis is often underdiagnosed? Because when we look at the reports that are out there about the condition, it is said that it very often is underdiagnosed. And it's not just in low and middle income countries. Of course, medicine has advanced, but it seems like there is still an issue with early diagnosis. What step can be taken to improve early diagnosis?
Yeah, so if you look at the estimate, if you look at the incidence, at least it's reported as between 5 to 15% around the world. But in Africa, because women do not present, most literature, maximum about 5%. And then it also depends on the population that you are studying. It's found out in women who do present for diagnostic laparoscopy for infertility workup, the incidence of endometriosis may be as high as 50%. But if patients do not report, did not present, then the diagnosis of endometriosis may not be picked up. And additionally, in our population, over majority of our women are also diagnosed with uterine fibroid. And then they may also present with heavy menstruation. They may present with lower abdominal pain. And because of such presentation, we may link possible endometriosis with that of uterine fibroid. So until diagnostic laparoscopy is done, it may be difficult to make a diagnosis of endometriosis purely from history.
So what are the treatments for endometriosis? Because some women live with it for a long time. Are there some specific treatments that are available to cure endometriosis, or is it a condition that a woman has to live with?
There are treatments, but the treatment is tailored to the wish of the patient. The treatment may be medical, may be surgical, may be a combination of the two. So for example, all that we do is to stop the production of the human estrogen. So once there's a mechanism to stop it, then the woman may not ovulate, she will not menstruate, and then the whole process is stopped. So we can put the patient on contraceptive pill. Once she does not ovulate, then only the process is curtailed. We can, in the measure, we can also use medication we call gonadotropin releasing analogs to put the woman in a state of postmenopausal state. So once her body is put in a state of menopause, this woman will not ovulate, and then the symptoms of endometriosis at least is reduced. Additionally, if the woman is done with her fertility, does not want to have more children, you may do surgical intervention that may involve either removal of the ovary, we call oophorectomy, or it may even involve the removal of the uterus and the ovary, which we call hysterectomy, sapingo oophorectomy. And in the advent of laparoscopy, we can also laparoscopically, at least surgically, manage endometriosis. So the management is not in a one form. It depends on the patient and the factors access to treatment modalities.
What message do you have for patients who suffer in silence?
I advise all patients, all women, to seek care. They should not ascribe lower abdominal pain, heavy menses, inability to conceive, to other conditions. And to they present to the hospital early, we take a detailed history, we perform thorough physical examination and investigations such as diagnostic laparoscopy. We come to at least make a diagnosis of endometriosis. And once endometriosis is diagnosed, together with the patient, we counsel the patient, and then the appropriate treatment modality is offered to the patient. Because I cannot imagine having a woman who cyclically is in pain, a woman who her mental state is affected because of this chronic pain, a woman who is unable to conceive because of adhesion as a result of endometriosis. But once they come to the hospital early and they seek care, most likely we'll be able to help them so that their quality of life is improved.
Are there lifestyle steps that a woman can take to prevent endometriosis? Or maybe when she has it, perhaps a lifestyle step that can help also alleviate the pain or reduce the incidence of the disease?
I wouldn't say there's one that step that a patient, a woman can do to prevent the occurrence of endometriosis, because the development of endometriosis may be multifactorial. There are other factors that may be involved. So all that I want to tell women that healthy living, exercise, very important. However, when they do have symptoms that are suggestive of endometriosis, i.e. lower abdominal pain, heavy menstruation, inability to conceive, some cases of endometriosis may present breathlessness, difficulty in breathing, because when you have endometriotic lesions in the lungs, that a time may come, the patient may or the woman may come with difficulty in breathing. But I must say, women should seek care. There are management options that will help to improve their quality of life.
Dr. Augustine Tawia, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
And that's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Lenore Muldoon in Washington, with producer Mugbilia Barrow.